Well, in November of 97, Maldacena's seminal paper appeared, and in February, the two groups from Princeton showed us all how to play the game. And while many then leaped for fame and immortality, we at MIT took a more prosaic approach, and we decided to compute correlation functions and check Ward identities. And I like to think of these things as the infrastructure of the Maldacena conjecture, like the roads and bridges we take for granted, but they are important nevertheless to support a healthy economy. So with that as a prelude, I can tell you that my talk contains two chapters. Chapter one is titled A Nice Place to Visit. Scientifically speaking, it'll describe 2- and 3-point functions. Chapter two, titled But You Wouldn't Want to Live There, and that is 4-point functions. Okay, I will say only a very few things about our first and only paper on the subject. The first thing I want to say is thou shalt study inversion. Inversion is a discrete isometry of the Euclidean ADS metric. Here's the coordinate transformation. It's a diffeomorphism, and the metric is invariant. If you compute the Jacobian of this change of variables, then you will encounter a matrix we've defined here as J. J is an important matrix in all applications of conformal symmetry. It has some very pretty properties, which I don't have time to describe. The second thing I want to say is study inversion. That is, use inversion, or can be used very nicely, I think, as a change of variables, which will allow you to calculate 3-point functions of any tensorial complexity, combinations of currents, scalars, stress tensors, and even fermions. Some of these things were in our paper. Some of them have been done by others. And what happens generically is if you take that 5-dimensional integral, which written here is a Witten diagram, and simply make the inversion as a change of variables, you find that the denominator of the particle line that was initially at zero disappears, essentially because zero has been mapped to infinity. You're left with then 2 denominators in a very easy integral. I will talk in somewhat more detail about superconformal non-renormalization theorems. This is the fact that some of the amplitudes one calculates in this Maldacena limit, which is a strong coupling limit, are nevertheless equal to their free field values. And by the way, these theorems are true to all n, not just the leading order in n. There are non-renormalization theorems of this type, which are satisfied by 2-point functions of all operators in the same n equal 4 multiplet as the stress tensor and the 15 SU4 currents. And roughly speaking, the argument for them goes as follows. If you look at the central charge in the JJ Faber current 2-point function, that's a quantity D, that is related by scale considerations and supersymmetry to a 3-point function involving the U1R current. One only uses n equal 1 supersymmetry in this argument, by the way, and that is uncorrected by the Adler-Bardeen theorem. Now, this is as well known as the multiplet of operators whose lowest component is quadratic in the real scalars of the n equal 4 theory. This is a symmetric traceless combination, which I've indicated here in the Faber degrees of freedom. It's convenient for many applications to take an n equal to 1 reduction or description where only the SU3 part of the Faber group is manifest. That 20 prime of this operator breaks up into 8 plus 6 plus 6 bar under SU3. Here I take a superfield description, so one talks about this set of superfield operators, which are the 8, the 6, and the 6 bar. For example, here you have phi bar, an SU3 Faber matrix, and then the superfield phi. Now, it turns out that 3-point functions of the same set of operators are also not corrected by normal radiative corrections for 2 reasons. First of all, Osborne has been carrying out a study of superconformal correlators, mostly in n equal to 1 superspace, because there you have, at least many of us think, the most control. So, for example, if you take these superfield operators Ka, you can consider a 3-point function where 1 indicates the x and theta components of the point 1 in superspace. And after some exchanges with from me, Osborne has proven that if you look separately at the D and F symbol parts of this correlator, they correspond or they go with unique superspace tensors, shall we call them, functions of the superspace points, one totally symmetric and one Bose antisymmetric. Then if you take such a supercorrelator, consider the ordinary three-current component of that, you find that the F symbol part is related to the two-point function of currents by the Ward identity. Known this two-point function by the previous remarks is uncorrected. And the D symbol part effectively is the flavor anomaly, which is uncorrected by Adler-Bardeen. There's also probably a superspace version of the Ward identity, but I'm not familiar with it, so I didn't really speak about it. Now, from this line of thinking, you would not expect two and three-point functions of other superconformal primary operators to be non-renormalized. You would expect there to be radiative corrections. Okay. But 10 days ago, there was a paper by another Princeton group who did a supergravity calculation of three-point functions of all operators of this trace x to the k conformal family, conformal primary family. And they found concretely that in the Maldacena limit of large n and fixed large to Hooft coupling, the constant one obtains was equal to the free value, no radiative corrections. They conjectured with some evidence I don't want to talk about the fact that this was also true in the large n limit for all values of lambda equal g squared n, and they speculated that there were no radiative corrections for any n. Well, when I first read that paper, I considered it to be an unbelievable result. That is, I considered it to be wrong. And I can tell you that the prospect of proving a famous person wrong powerfully focuses the mind, and it attracts also powerful collaborators, in this case, Eric Doker and Vitek Skiba. And in work that's now nearly finished, what we decided to look at was something very prosaic. Within the n equal to 4 field theory, we just want to compute the lowest order g squared corrections to three-point, and we'll turn also to two-point correlators. Okay. And our initial intuition was the following, that just because of obvious combinatorics, so we thought, the order k squared graphs with genuine four-point interactions they ought to be of order k squared, and they would never cancel the order k graphs, which came from self-energy insertions. And therefore, the net radiative corrections could at best cancel for one value of k, namely the value for which there's a known non-renormalization theorem. Now, this initial intuition is to be contrasted with the results of a systematic study. Again, we made an n equal 1 flavor SU3 reduction. Instead of six real X scalar fields, we have three Zs and their conjugates. It was simplifying for us to consider always SU3 flavor highest weights, and that simplifies the flavor combinatorics immensely. It doesn't change any of the big questions. This is sufficient to learn about the full SU4 amplitudes, but it simplifies the problem. Now, the basic elements, so to speak, that describe the interactions that we're going to study is a four-point structure, which consists, group theoretically, of products of two F symbols. You can find that from the N equal 4 Lagrangian. And by power counting a factor of 1 over x minus y to the fourth, if you were to do the integrals that are involved here, and function B in the numerator, it's something I've evaluated in my past work, but I had left my notes in Boston and I was working on the West Coast. We know that it can only be a constant plus a single log. Turns out we won't need to know these particular numbers. The self-energy is even simpler to describe. It's a Kronecker delta in color. It gets a factor of n from the adjoint Casimir, and the unknown amplitude A is again a constant plus a logarithm. Now, the essential part of this problem is really color combinatorics. And for example, if you just study the Born term in this two-point function, You can get everything right by considering a fixed ordering on the Z lines on the left-hand side, and then sum over all permutations of the Z bar lines on the right-hand side. So you get a product of K Euclidean propagators, and you get a trace which is contracted, and you have to sum over permutations. That sum will give you a very definite polynomial of degree K in N, and the leading term is easy to calculate, and it has a factor of K and over 2 to the K. And in fact, all terms have a overall factor of K in this polynomial, simply because by cyclicity of the trace, how do I say it? There are the permutations you sum over break up into classes, each of which has K identical, contributes a K identical terms. And I would stress here, even though I wrote only the leading term here, the statements I'm going to make about this problem are true for all n, not just the leading order. So then the next step was to put in these interactions. So for each fixed permutation of those final lines, what you want to do is put in the four-point B interaction between all possible pairs. You get a factor of K because you can choose the first line in K equivalent ways. And then you have to sum over all attachments. You can convert the F symbols, which are present in that interaction structure, into commutators inside the trace. And then you find that there's a nearly complete cancellation between plus terms from one commutator and minus terms from the next. Okay? And that's why our initial intuition about things building up to order k squared is wrong. There's a cancellation instead of a reinforcement. And the residual trace you get has this initial factor of k, G squared times the group Casimir, that basic logarithmic, possibly logarithmic structure B in the power law, and again, the same trace that occurred in the Born diagram. Okay. It's even simpler to add the sum of self-energy insertions, then you do the sum over permutations, and you find a net result, which is a rigorous factor of K, the combination 4B plus A times this same polynomial that occurred in the Born term. Okay, so this is a sum over all the contributing graphs to order G squared. And you know that for K equal to 2, it has to cancel by the non-renormalization theorem. And our mathematical form shows that it must therefore cancel for all K. And therefore, the result here is that the leading order corrections to this two-point function cancel to all orders in SUN. We then did a similar analysis of a particular three-point function where you still take trace x to the k, trace z to the k, trace z bar to the k upstairs, take a flavor quadratic z bar t z downstairs. And again, after being careful about the combinatorics, we found that the rainbow graphs where things travel within the upper set of lines only, gave a term proportion given by this expression. And you see, to leading order in K, the linear terms in K involve 4b plus a, which we already know to be 0. There are some residual terms here. The residual terms combine with the terms which are non-rainbow from the point of view of this big three-point function. And you can show that they occur exactly in the combination which vanishes for the three-point non-renormalization theorem for the quadratic operator, K equal to 2. So again, to all orders in N, the three-point function is not radiatively corrected to lowest order in G squared. Now, this combinatorics approach certainly is going to apply to the general three-point function. We think it's going to have the same property, but I don't want to make a statement until we have a little bit more chance to work out the details. So to summarize, what have we done here? We have a new check of the correspondence between supergravity and the bulk and the boundary n equal 4 gauge theory. We confirm this Princeton work in the strongest form in which they talked about. And I don't have a real clue right now as to why this works for all n. It could be an accident of the simple forms of the interactions to lowest order. And I would point out that you get genuine six-particle interaction structures if you go to the next order in perturbation theory. So I do not know what's going to happen there. Okay, that's chapter 1. Here's chapter 2. Now, various people have been commenting on my title, and Emil Martinek contributed the idea that the reason why you wouldn't want to live in anti-de Sitter space is you couldn't get away for the weekend. And scientifically speaking, you wouldn't want to live in anti-de Sitter space because exact results for four-point functions are rather difficult. But we will find some interesting approximate results nonetheless. There is one previous result by a Canadian group where they expressed this four-point contact interaction for all equal masses as a one-dimensional integral of a hypergeometric function of complicated argument. Now, what you would really like to do is study correlators involving the flavor currents in the stress tensor. And those are going to involve the bulk-to-bulk photon or graviton propagator. And on ADS-5, those are very complicated. There is a helpful reference here, a paper by Allen and Jacobson, which I think was written in Santa Barbara some years ago. And we've studied that paper, but, before we launch into a 10-dimensional interval, we want to be absolutely certain of what the input is, and we haven't reached that level of confidence yet. Okay. So we then decided to backtrack a little and look at scalar graphs, four-point function graphs of this sort, where all of the lines were scalar, and we assumed then that for this purpose that scalars of arbitrary mass or arbitrary dimension had arbitrary three-point couplings. So in other words, we were looking at, well, perhaps fictional scalar graphs. I must say I'm a bit annoyed at those Princeton people because first they, on page one of their paper, they accused us of studying perhaps fictional interactions, and then they went ahead to use all of our fictional results to derive their realistic results for three-point functions. But that's okay. Well, so now we need the bulk-to-bulk scalar propagator. Those have been well known for years to be hypergeometric functions of the chordal distance variable, the distance between two points on the ADS when viewed as a five-dimensional hyperboloid embedded in six-dimensional space. And that chordal distance variable u, can be easily expressed, it turns out, in terms of the coordinates most people use in this game, the coordinates of the hyperbolic space. Okay. And because of the boundary, these propagators tend to have an image charge structure, so it's useful to speak also about u star, which is given by the difference between a one point on the hyperboloid and its image point. Okay. And u and u star are related. There's no... Now, there are several different forms of hypergeometric functions, different representations, so to speak. If you look at the right representations and put in the fact that gauge supergravity tells you that the scalar masses are integers, then the hypergeometric functions simplify into algebraic functions. And the simplest case is the propagator for the dimension 3 scalar, which is this, which is a constant, which I won't talk about now, some gamma functions, times this function of the chordal distance variables. Basically, it's 1 over uu star to the 3 halves power. The delta equal 3 scalar, by the way, corresponds to the quadratic spinner, quadratic Gugino invariant in the boundary theory. Here's another propagator for the delta equal 2 scalar, where this first structure is corrected by a linear polynomial, which is even under reflection. So what you would like to do is work out these 10-dimensional integrals in which we have these bulk-to-bulk propagators multiplied by a product of four bulk-to-boundary propagators for the four external lines. And despite a lot of study, we have no exact result yet for these integrals, and nor any useful integral representations. And the inversion, which I highly praised for three-point functions, is only of modest help when you come to four-point functions. So we then revised our goals, and we sought, instead of an exact result, some way to compare the prediction of anti-de Sitter gravity for the, or an anti-de Sitter bulk theory for the scalar four-point function with the operator product expansion in the four-dimensional boundary theory. And this, again, is work which is well in progress by the original four horsemen of MIT. So we, why the delay? Is the speed of sound slow in this room? I'm sorry. So what we wanted to do is work in a region where the distances between points 1 and points 2 on the boundary and 3 and 4 were, how many? 5, thank you. I think we can do this. I don't think you counted right, but never mind. All right, I think I can do this, actually. Where this distance was small compared to the distances between the other two points, we made the working assumption to be tested that this S-channel anti-de-Sitter tree graph with a particular scalar propagator in the intermediate state corresponded to the contribution in the boundary theory of the scalar corresponding to that operator and all of its descendants in the operator product expansions of the two initial operators and the two final operators. Okay. So we call this operator product expansion with one primary and descendants a baby OPE. All of the descendants are derivatives, and you just get an expansion in derivatives when you evaluate, when you look at that OPE. And it won't be a surprise to you that since the OPE really can be obtained by, from a particular limit of the three-point function, again, just on the boundary theory, no ADS physics yet, okay, you can find what all of those descendant coefficients are very easily. And here's the first one. So if you put in this this is what I call the double baby E expansion. If you put in the OPE in the S in the 1-2 channel, in the 3-4 channel, contract the two-point functions in the middle, you get a double sum representation where you have an overall power in front dictated by basically by power counting, a double sum over these alpha coefficients, small distances, x1-2 and x3-4, tensorially contract into two-point functions of descendant operators. Okay. Now, can you extract a similar series from the ADS graph? That's the question. And we did, making an assumption, which we can't really fully justify yet. The idea was that the dominant region of the 10-dimensional integration space should be come from the point where the left-hand point z mu was close in the spatial coordinates to x1, the right-hand point W nu was close to x3, and we then simply considered an expansion of the intermediate propagator about those points. Okay. And again, the leading term is 1 over x13 to the sixth, and essentially independent of the integration variables. The integration variables pop upstairs, and you get a descending, you get a series in powers of order 1 over x3 to various powers. Okay. And I've written here the various tensor structures which we have actually checked and put into correspondence with the OPE. The 1 over x cubed structure we could write down, but we haven't had time to check it yet. Now, what's very interesting is that if you look at the integrals that would appear in this graph in higher order, they would actually diverge by power counting, the corresponding 10-dimensional integrals, but they converge due to angular cancellations. And I think that's somewhat of a miracle. I don't know of a reason for it. The 10-dimensional integrals then factor, term by term, into 5-dimensional integrals, which can be just obtained very simply from our first set of results. And what I think is really remarkable is that the results then agree in complete detail with this double baby OPE expansion up to the order of the terms I mentioned, m plus n equal to 1, 2, and a particular tensor structure from order 4. And this is complete agreement in detail. All of the normalizations put in, agreement holds for any dimension of the operators on the boundary. There are more than 3 independent tensor structures involved in this test. Okay. Well, what is the significance of this result? I am not sure. Well, I think I can make some statements. I think the precise factorization of the four-point function is a new test of the Maldacena conjecture. It somehow probes a universal kinematic property of the bulk-to-bulk anti-de-Sitter propagator. Somehow this five-dimensional propagator knows about life on the four-dimensional boundary. Okay. Now, I can't really answer this question. Is it really just an automatic consequence of the isometries in the bulk in the boundary theory, or is it more? I think it's more because the operator product expansion is a nonlinear structure after all. I think there are more than symmetries involved. I'm sorry, my chairman is pressing me. All right, let me wrap it up then. Another thing we were able to do is sum this double baby. This is, again, only from the point of view of the boundary of a conformal field theory in four dimensions in the boundary. We were able to sum the double baby OPE series into a double hypergeometric function. What else would you expect for a double baby OPE series? Okay. There's a wonderful identity satisfied by this function, which allows you to prove Bose asymmetry, which wasn't obvious in the first representation. Okay. And the work isn't finished yet. We have several other interesting ideas under study. I should say that a good reason to suppress this last part anyway, despite the lack of time, is that after I wrote out my talk, I ran into Sergio Ferrara last night in the ITP building, and he said that very similar results, and probably more, were obtained in his work with some Italian collaborators in the 70s. And he will be talking about some of it. All right, so maybe I better close there. Thank you. No, but that's a good idea. We have that in mind, to try to derive, for example, an equation for same equation from the integral representation of the amplitude. Is that what you have in mind? We haven't had time.
Are there any operators in the Amish theory which may correspond to massive fields with spin higher than 2?
Yes, there are, I believe. And Sergio will talk about some of them. Ferrara will talk about some of them, as he said yesterday. I think I'm supposed to be repeating the questions, and neither of us has done that. I'm sorry. Is there another question? Yes?
You expect the same result for three-point functions of the F4 when we have sort of formula related basis?
I have some doubts about that. I am not clear. Okay, that's something we want to look at. He said, do you expect the same non-renormalization results for other three-point functions? You say three-point functions? For other three-point functions, other than those explicitly studied by the Princeton group. I believe there's to be another talk at this conference on that work, so we can look in more detail then.
Okay, one last question.
There's some aspect of dynamics, which is dynamics in four dimensions, which is captured by gravity in five dimensions. And as you see, we didn't even use gravity in five dimensions, except to form the anti-de Sitter metric. There's something really deep going on.
Okay, could we thank the speaker again?